You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Well, shit. Good evening, everybody. Welcome to the Talking Cop. We're here for another full-time match reaction. I'm your host, as always, Matt. I'm joined by my partner in crime, as usual, Kev O'Sullivan. And coming back in for her second and a vastly different one of these shows is Ashley L. Straight from the chat. It's finished at Old Trafford. Manchester United 4, Liverpool 3 in what I'm sure the neutrals and Manchester United fans are calling an instant classic. I get the feeling that some of our opinions might be slightly different on that. Ashley, slight change from a 6-1, wasn't it?
Yep, definitely a change in tone. But, you know, they looked like a team whose entire season rested on that game. And we looked like a team who, that was our third most important thing on our docket at the moment. So.
Yeah, It shouldn't have been, Kev. That should have been the most important game that we've ever played in our entire lives, that moment. And happy St. Patrick's Day to you, Kev.
Yeah.
Great one.
Feel a lollipop for everyone in the chat. Yeah, that was an absolute pile of shit. An absolute pile of shit from start to finish. We had enough chances to bury that game. And in truth, it should have never gone to extra time. With that chance that he missed at the end.
Yeah.
And in the end, got what we deserved for not taking our chances. It was a shit show. And you could tell that they wanted it more. They were more aggressive. They were reacting to first tackles. They were getting to first balls, the breakdowns. They were winning most of the 50-50s. It was shite. There's no way to dress it up. It was absolute shit. And at the end of the day, I'd rather if you're gonna lose a game, lose this one, not drop 3 points against anyone. But yeah, that was shit. Yeah, and in fairness, there's no complaints about it. There is no complaints about it. They did more than enough to win that. And we can't argue. I mean, there's decisions that were made in the game that were fucking driving me insane, but ultimately you can't knock it because they ended up with Bruno Fernandes limping around at centre back and Harry fucking Maguire, and
almost, you know, playing centre forward.
Yeah, they went for broke and they got rewarded for it. But at the end of the day, we were just absolutely all over the place for an experienced 11 and players that can play better. They just didn't turn up for the first half hour. They didn't manage the game how we need them to manage it. And I don't know. Look, let's just get into it because that was just a pile of shite.
Yeah, yes. I'm sure everybody is somewhere on the spectrum between completely apoplectic and their heads fell off. totally and utterly. I mean, swing it right back around to the start. Ashley, it was pretty much the strongest 11 that we could have fielded, injuries considered. The only potential change would have been maybe Connor Bradley in at right back instead of Joe Gomez, but we had Kelleher between the sticks, Gomez and Robertson at fullback, Kwanzaa and Van Dyke. And then I think, honestly, I think our strongest front six, even if we didn't have any injuries, with Szoboszlai, Endo McAllister, Salah, Darwin Núñez, and Luis Diaz, you have to be confident seeing that 11 coming in. You know, the form that we've been in, the role that we've been on, that's a solid starting 11, isn't it?
It should have been enough. It definitely should have been enough. And I was really surprised to see, how passive we were in the beginning. I mean, I know that we have this kind of sit back first half, come at them strong second half thing that's been happening this season, but I don't know. I mean, if there was ever a team to go at strong, I feel like they were there for the taking. And instead of that, they did that to us. I mean, they hammered us for the first, I'd say 10, 15 minutes. Like, I didn't think we had any control whatsoever. And I was shocked by that.
Yeah, I can understand us feeling our way in through the first 10, 15 minutes. It's like I said in the last show, you know, you don't exactly know what the opposition's going to do. You want to see how it's actually playing out on the pitch. But we were slow. But the first clear-cut chance of the game, Kev, it comes to us. I mean, Darwin Núñez puts a right-to-left cross in, Mo Salah popping up on the left forward position. First-time volley, puts it just wide of the post. And you're thinking, okay, here we go. And then they scored.
Yeah, look, they worked it well, their chance. They just had runners from midfield into in beyond and hoping that one of them work out. And that's what happened. You know, you had players being drawn to the ball and not tracking runners. And ultimately, there's enough blade to go around. But you can't say it wasn't against a runner play. They were snapping into everything, and you could tell a mile off that this meant more to them. They knew that everything hinged on this, and they won the midfield battle for the first 20 minutes. That's our strongest 11, bar Bradley coming in for Joe Gomez, which you could argue over, but that's as good as we can put out with who's available. And midfield was just all over the show. They were running off us left, right, and centre. We couldn't get to grips with the ball. Couldn't get to grips with the game. And, you know, I don't think Keller could have done anything about it. But you have to track your runner. And that's where it came from. It's just people not doing the basics. Endo probably didn't cover himself in glory either. That's what I mean. There's enough blame to throw about for that first goal. Oh. And you think, okay, fine. It's not the first time that you go 1-0 down. Fine. Relax. Usually you go one down, someone gets their foot on the ball and say, okay, we'll start playing through the thirds. But it took another 15 minutes for that to happen. You know, it was, I mean, nobody seemed to want to take responsibility to turn around and say, okay, this is how you play against society, play 4-2-3-1. They didn't do anything fucking spectacular, Manchester United. It wasn't like they ripped open a new manual of how to play football and we need to suss it out. The only player that I think stood out for them, and I think he stood out for most of the game, was Maynou.
Yeah.
He looks a proper talent. He's going to be a thorn in our side for a good while. He's a very good player. But we made one change tactically at about halfway through the first half, and we allowed Szoboszlai to get closer to the front three. And he was occupying the space in between the lines. And once that happened, that's when we started to get more of a foothold into the first half.
Yeah.
Until then, I didn't know what anyone was trying to achieve. Never mind where they were supposed to be playing. I didn't know what they were supposed to be trying to do. Or how they were going to try and build up an attack. How they were going to try to manage Rashford, not lose the ball in certain areas. It was helter-skelter when it didn't need to be. That's what drove me fucking nuts. You know, it was like, this is the same, as Thor puts out there, that was the same midfield that bossed the second half against Man City, more or less. and they were given the runaround against this lot, you know, for large parts of that first half. And that's where what these games in particular are won and lost. Win a midfield battle, and you'll win out comfortably. But we were never close to them. It drove me absolutely fucking spare.
Yeah, it was that before the ball was kicked, I looked at them lining up with ostensibly what was going to be a double pivot of Mainu and McTominay. But you know that McTominay is going to be pushing forward. Like he's had this little renaissance at United this season after they tried to sell him in the summer by pushing forward and getting into the box and creating goals. And I mean, we see it. He's there. He's on the end of the goal that makes it 1-0 after 10 minutes. But when you think that who's going to be the third person for them in the midfield, it's not going to be any of their, you know, they don't work with inverting fullbacks. So it's not going to be Dallow or Wan-Bissaka coming into the middle to make the numbers up. It's going to be Bruno dropping deep or Garnacho or Rashford. They're not going to really drop deep. Hoyland doesn't really drop deep. And so I'm looking at it going, well, we've got Szoboszlai, Endo, and McAllister, who were fantastic against Manchester City's midfield, where they outnumbered us in midfield and have better players in midfield. I couldn't understand that, but you were right to point out that they were luring us into traps. And I mean, I'm presuming you saw this as well too, Ashley. There was a stat that came up, I think it was in the first half, that like 60% of Manchester United's attacks were coming down their left-hand side. And it seemed like they had a definitive game plan to play the ball. If they had it on the right-hand side, like I thought Diogo Dalo had a fantastic game. I thought his long passing was outstanding. He played some crossfield balls that were absolutely inch perfect, but they'd switch the ball from right to left, get us on the back foot, coming down the right-hand side. They'd hold the ball for a second. And of all the people, Aaron Wan-Bissaka is making these underlapping runs from fullback into that channel in between Joe Gomez and Jarrell Kwanzaa. And we just had no way of dealing with it at all. And it just kept coming again and again and again. And like, Ashley, I don't know if I certainly expected us to correct it quicker than we did, but it seemed like it took us until about a half an hour until the change that Kev mentioned of Szoboszlai getting a little bit more freedom in the middle of the park, but also just kind of understanding what they were doing. And that's troublesome, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, you say they switched it at 30 minutes, and yeah, there were some tactical switches, but I mean, the number of times that Gomez was drifting into the midfield and leaving that space. And, you know, I love Kwanzaa. I think he's done spectacularly, but it's a lot to ask him to do the Konate role. Like when Konate is playing that role with Trent inverting, Konate is basically taking up two positions, and his speed and everything gets him out of that. And I'm not saying that Kwanzaa doesn't have the capability to get there one day, but it's just a lot to put on his shoulders. And I felt like I didn't really see the reward in the end from Gomez drifting in that many times. I think that could have been resolved. And you're right. They exploited that time and time again. It was like, I mean, that was the only thing that my commentators were talking about was, you know, oh, hey, look at this space that's left behind. So I don't know. I mean, it was obviously a tactical decision by Klopp, but it didn't pay off this time.
Yeah. And to just put a little extra cherry on top of the delicious shit Sunday that we're all eating, as Liverpool fans, Manchester United have just drawn Coventry City in the FA Cup semifinals. So that's just a little extra nugget of deliciousness for us all to chow down upon. But it is what it is. I mean, Kev, you mentioned the young kid, Mainu. The 35th minute, it should be 2-0 to United. He does so well dribbling the ball on the left-hand side. The cross eventually comes into the middle, and McTominay does everything except for not hit Kelleher in the chest with that shot. And it's like we're creaking, it feels like, at that point. But that was the big moment, it felt like. I mean, hindsight now obviously is 20/20. But in the game, that felt like up until about the 85th minute of like, boy, they missed their chance there because they should have been 2-0 up because they had us on the ropes and they should have scored.
Yeah, I mean, the game really changed on the offside goal that Endo scored that didn't count.
Which was a minute after the McTominay save, yeah.
Yeah, because that was the first time, really, that our press was effective. That it was properly brave and you could tell from then it was like a switch was flicked, that they said, okay, when, you know, they spotted the patterns and they got their, they were braver, really. That's all it was. It was just a lack of bravery. And I thought once that went in, it was offside. There was no argument about it. But I felt if we're going to get joy out of, if anything, it's going to be out of that. And, you know, a couple of minutes later, we did get it. But it shouldn't take that long to suss out where we need to be. It's not like they're doing it for the first time. The only caveat that you can say, and they mentioned this in our commentary, and this is far from an excuse because I don't do excuses. We've played 6 games more than Manchester United. And we've played Thursday night as well. So asking them to be machines and be on it 24/7, 365 is unrealistic. So you can go to Old Trafford and have a shit half. And we did. But at the same time, you know, we got our rewards at the end of the half for taking more risks, more calculated gambles.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, Kieran B. Comment here says our press was very half ours today. And, like, actually, we turned it on at the end of the half. I wrote down somewhere around after the 40th minute, I put, there's a goal here for us before the half. And modern-day Nostradamus me, because, I mean, 44th minute, Jarrell Kwanza. I mean, what a Joel Matip impression that is. I mean, he picks the ball from the back. It is extremely lazy from Bruno Fernandes. It is extremely lazy from Marcus Rashford. They just let him walk right by him. He gets into the box. He pulls the ball back to Darwin Nunez. And I think it's a fair assumption that most people presume that Darwin was just going to try to whip his foot around that ball and screw it wildly, you know, into the stands. But instead, he plays a beautiful layoff to Alexis McAllister, who gets a little bit of luck off of the highly unfortunate Kobbie Mainoo, who was doing quite well in that game, and it makes it 1-1. But against the run of play, wasn't it?
Yeah, I mean, that's 5 goals for McAllister this season so far, which is great from our midfield. We've been calling out for midfield goals for 3 years now, and yeah, I mean, I loved the Kwanzaa baby giraffe Matip impersonation. It's one of my favorite things that Matip does, so it was nice to see that. And yeah, like I thought that was going to set the tone, and it did for the next, you know, however many minutes we had left of the half. Like, I thought that was game on. Like, finally, we're going to see the true Liverpool. And I don't know. I mean, the half ended great.
Yeah. 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 We really took the air out of the Old Trafford crowd, because, you know, they were getting up for it. They're at that moment, Kev, when you get to that, you know, couple minutes before halftime, they're about to put the board up for how many added minutes. You got a 1-0 lead against a team that you're not favorites against, and then we go down, we get that first goal, and then bang bang, you know, Mo Salah,
yeah,
puts it in the back of the net. It's coming from the press, yeah, working though. And I mean, it makes it even better from the fact that it's Bruno Fernandes who goes down in a heap looking for a soft foul, and we score.
But that was really good from Joe Gomez, because that was the first time that he decided to just go. And from right back to be pressing that high up the pitch from their goal kick, you know, knowing what's behind you and still going, that's what played him into trouble. And Fernandes went down in the heap. It was never a foul in the month of Sundays. And they checked it and checked it and checked it. And they looked for anything to try to chalk it off. But it was a perfectly good goal. On the McAllister one, that layoff back to him was brilliant. And if you're going to take a shot from outside the box, take the shot, you get your look. You get your look if you take the shot. And with Salah's one, it was created by Gomez. But again, you're going into halftime at 2-1, and you've got away with it. You've absolutely got away with one going into halftime 2-1, because in all fairness, you deserve nothing out of it, apart from what you showed in the last 15 minutes and a half. You know, you started to play a lot better in the build-up to that last 5 minutes. But, you know, that's when you got to hope that you get in a halftime, you regroup, and you say, okay, no more of this nonsense. Get the grips of the second half, see this out, and we'll all go off on our international break, and we'll see you after, kind of thing. And, you know, go to halftime. I wasn't expecting any change. I don't know about anyone else. I wasn't expecting any changes or anything, but I did expect to see a much better, more disciplined performance and just move the ball faster. Move the ball faster through midfield, and you get your rewards. And we did for large parts of that second half. We moved the ball much quicker through midfield, and we created chance after chance after chance. They were always going to get chances in the second half. It's just the nature of football. The side at home throws a kitchen sink at it, that they're going to get chances. You just have to learn how to manage it. And, you know, I was just hoping that, not a rocket up them, but, you know, a word that they would come out and just be a bit more disciplined, a bit more organized, and manage the game much better. And
yeah, it should have been a simple, we don't do that first half hour again, team talk from Jurgen Klopp. Just before I come to you, Ashley, for your halftime thoughts, I have to point out, on the 40th minute, it was after the goal that was ruled out for offside. Then we had another chance where Mo was offside again. Manchester United had a counterattack, and Rasmus Højlund gets the ball on the halfway line, and he looks up, and he's 1v1 with Virgil van Dijk, and he just stopped. He just stopped, and he checked it back, and I absolutely loved it, because that's the sort of things that we're used to seeing Virgil van Dijk doing. But
was it Højlund, Ashley, or was it Garnacho?
No, it
was
Højlund
or Garnacho?
It was Højlund. Oh. Yeah, he wanted nothing to do with it. Nothing to do with it. It was brilliant. It was shades of Lautaro Martinez. Just looking to pass it back to Onana. I mean, halftime, Ashley, how you feeling? You know, we survived a tight first half hour. We've got the two goals. We're in the lead. Buoyant, yeah. Right?
I mean, it felt like a bit of a get-out-of-jail-free card. You know, we got the two goals, and all of a sudden you're like, okay, we can just forget about that horrible first half we had and hope that Klopp works his magic, because he's got this great halftime talk, and I'm sure he'll have a plan. And, you know, there was improvement. There was definitely improvement in the second half, but I don't know if it was like improvement with consequence at the end of it. I feel like a lot of our final pass at the very end of the move, I don't know, it just didn't feel like it had any purpose.
Yeah. I think all of our attackers were really off of it today. And I mean, Kev, you say you're not one for making excuses, so I might have to double down and do the work of two men on this one. But is there a shout for just the workload catching up to him, the number of minutes being put into some of these players? Because as we get into the extra time, I was astonished at how completely out on their feet all of our players were, even some of the ones who came on as substitutes.
I was watching the second half, and I thought Manchester United's midfield looked gassed. I thought they all looked jaded.
Yeah, second half we were all right until we got to about maybe 5-10 minutes left in regular time, and then into injury time, and then we were just shot.
I've seen that half before, you know, a few times this season, and you see it in previous years where Entitled FC turns up, and Entitled FC expect this, whoever they're playing against, to just sit back and create two banks of four and just let them go and go and go. Manchester United didn't do that. You know, Manchester United against Everton conceded something like 30-odd shots. We peppered them with shots at Anfield. They were atrocious against Manchester City, you know. But in those games, they created counters, decent chances. We turned up today in that first half and expected Manchester United to just roll over because we were chasing the quad, you know. And I did not have any nerves going into this game. I said it to you earlier on before the game started. I did not have any nerves going, not like years ago, in previous years when you were playing against Manchester United at Old Trafford. It's a horrible, shitty game, and they're very rarely good games. You very rarely get anything out of it, and I was always feeling the worst. I never once today felt like we were going to lose that. And even at halftime, you're 2-1 up, I expected us to manage it much better than what we did. And I just there's too many. I'd love to blame senior players, but there's enough collective blame to go around to rather than single any. There's no point in singling anyone out because we didn't lose that game on an individual.
You know, I mean, it feels like the chat would like to single at least a couple of people.
There's agendas everywhere, and people have been keeping their powder dry on the agendas with players, and they've got them there, and then they bring them out when things go sideways a little bit.
That's fine. That's up to them. But how can we blame Curtis Jones for this loss today? Oh shit, not him. We'll have to pick another one. Yes. Ashley does want to confirm that her dog is in fact alive. She refuses to give us proof of life, but she's telling us, and we have no reason not to believe her. There's a comment here from LFC Spectre that says, second half, we were all over them. We didn't put the ball in the back of the net until the game changed when we made the subs of taking off Robbo and Salah. But before that, Ashley, 57th minute, ball falls to Szoboszlai on the edge of the box. He gets a shot off. He is blocked / fouled by Bruno Fernandes. What were your thoughts on that one?
I mean, my initial thought is, oh, that looks like a second yellow. I don't know. I mean, in the slow motion, I could see an argument for, you know, the ball was played, you know, but we also see all the time, does tackling the ball mean that it's not a reckless challenge? I don't know. But no, I'm okay with him skating there. I don't know. I wasn't screaming at the top of my lungs for him to get sent off, even though I would love to see him get sent off every single game.
It would be beautiful, wouldn't it? Kev, what about you?
It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
That's a yellow card all day long. As proved by the yellow card Joe Gomez got a couple of minutes later.
That does go hand in hand with it, does it not? It's almost like you read my notes, Kev.
Mate, it's a yellow card. At the end of the day, there is no argument about that for me. I can't see how that's in any way, shape, or form not a yellow card. And that's a referee wanting not to make a decision at Old Trafford. You know, he'd already had a yellow card for being a gobby little twat. And, you know, he didn't want to send him off on the strength of that first yellow. And that happens a lot. You see that in a lot of games where the referee is very hesitant to send a player off for a second yellow if the first yellow is dissent. You know, but for me, that one is clearly a yellow card, compounded with the yellow card that Joe Gomez rightly got when he got one, because that's a yellow card. It's foul. His studs are up. He didn't get the ball first. It's a booking.
Did Gomez not get that ball first?
No, he didn't.
Should have been a penalty.
But every which way you look at it, his foot was up way too high. You should, like last week, your foot has no reason to be that high. And if you make contact with a player, you're going to get a booking for it.
Which is shocking, because this is John Brooks we're talking about, who didn't give a foul against Tyrone Mings for putting a cleat imprint on Cody Gakpo's chest last year.
Yeah, but look, for me, I can't see how it wasn't a booking. I just can't.
Yeah. Anybody know what SGD is in terms of a currency? We've got a super chat here from ENG91755, which thank you very much, that says, if we had seen the game off at 2-1, the negativity would be all over at Old Trafford. Let's lose this game and win the one on 7th of April now. And I think that's the sentiment that all of us, it might be a silver linings kind of thing, but we play United twice in the run-in today and in the league in April. And if you're going to trip up, if you're going to have a poor result in one of them, let it be this one. Let it be this one. Beat them in the league. And I think we're all on board with that. So ENG91755, thank you very much for the super chat. You should really just put that money towards getting yourself a membership to the Talking Cop anyways, because they're €3.99 a month, and it's tons and tons of good fun. There'll be some good member shows coming up over the international break, I believe Monday. Hopefully Phil Casey's young lad is coming on to give Gav the full grill interview treatment on it, and that's all well and good. But yes, LFC Spectre was talking about the turning point in the game being the substitutions. There's another turning point I think that needs to be talked about, and that's everybody's ability, whether you're listening to this live or on a download, to help out two really good causes, which are our 2024 charity fundraising partners, Fan Supporting Food Banks in Liverpool, the Lighthouse Cafe in Dublin. A couple of dollars, couple of euros, couple of pounds here and there from every few people helps get us to our fundraising target. We're trying to raise 10,000 euros. Scouser Pete says they're Singaporean dollars. Thank you very much, Scouser Pete. Those are probably worth about 100 Canadian dollars each. But our fundraising partners, please, you always find the link in the description. I know pretty much most of the people here in the live chat have heard this spiel 100 times from anybody hosting these shows. But if you're catching up afterwards, if you're a United fan in here for a little taste of the schadenfreude, you're welcome. Check out our charity sponsors. Go lash a couple of quid into there and help us hit our fundraising target for it. Become a member. Check out the footballprizes.co.uk, which has an amazing midfielders bundle all going on right now, an Alexis McAllister jersey and about 25 other instant win prizes that you can get, and that's all well and good. Ashley, the changes come, the first raft of changes come on the 71st minute. The recently back from injury, Hoyland and Wan-Bissaka go off for Man United. Anthony and Harry Maguire come on for them, and we take off Dominic Szoboszlai and bring on Harvey Elliott. I was fine with our change, Elliott, Szoboszlai. I felt that Elliott could feel a little hard done by not getting to start this game because he's been doing quite well for us. Szoboszlai didn't have the best game, whatnot, and I looked at the United change and was like, perfect. You know, as Rajiv in our Telegram chat always points out, Anthony doesn't score goals, and Harry Maguire is a walking meme, and it did kind of change the game, didn't it?
Yeah. So the commentator on my stream, one of the first things they said when Anthony came on was, Anthony has been a gigantic waste of money. And commentator's curse right there that came back to bite us. I don't know. I mean, nobody's really expecting him to come in and have an impact. Certainly not that impact. I was fine with Elliott coming on. You know, Szoboszlai's just back from injury. Elliott has been playing great. He always has an impact off of the bench and, you know, continues to do so today. But yeah, I didn't see it going the way it went.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, Kev, a couple minutes later, we make our second raft of substitutions. And these are probably the more important ones, the ones that LFC Spectre was alluding to in their comment. Gakpo comes on for Mo Salah and Connor Bradley comes on for Andy Robertson. And needless to say, if there's two people that have been catching the absolute pelters from upset Liverpool fans in the chat, Connor Bradley was one of them, but Cody Gakpo was certainly the prime candidate. And we lost a lot of impetus in that. And I think I'm willing to give Connor Bradley a pass because he's a young kid and he's been playing well above his station every time we've called on him. He's due a hiccup here and there, so he didn't have a great game. That's fine, but all season, Kev, we've been doing these shows, and for the first time in years, we've been lauding Jurgen Klopp's use of his substitutions in terms of changing games in our favor, and today did not work.
No, but at the end of the day, this is the cost of Salah having to play 90 on Thursday night. Thursday night was his first start since New Year's Day. You know, the fact that he was able to turn around and put in 70, 75, 76 minutes today is testament to his fitness. But at the end of the day, there was no way he was going to be able to do a 90, let alone 120. So the only thing that I wanted to, that I was hoping you'd see, I wanted to see Luis Diaz come over into the right-hand side and Gakpo go on to the left. But Gakpo coming onto the right, he was just anonymous. He couldn't influence the game at all. But, I mean, I'll be honest, I thought Luis Diaz was like the Energizer Bunny. Every time he got on the ball, he tried to make something happen. But I really wanted him to swap sides and get at Lindelof and try to give that side of Manchester United's attack think about having to do something going the other way. And, you know, whoever's to blame to that, it doesn't matter at the end of the day. I don't think there's anything much more Klopp could have made changes-wise at that moment, but to bring Cody Gakpo on. I suppose you could turn around and say, look, you're 2-1 up. Shore it up. You know, take off Salah, maybe bring on Bobby Clark and try to shore up midfield.
Or it told me that Gravenberch wasn't ready. Because why?
Yeah. Like,
you bring Gravenberch on and you put Elliott into Salah's position and you use that midfielder's kind of mind that Harvey Elliott possesses to give us those extra numbers there and see us out across the line. But I mean, Kev, because I see that Ashley's in full post-match quote mode right now, so I'll give her a skip over on that one. Kev, can you explain to me how on 79 minutes we have a 5v2 break and don't put that game to bed?
Yeah, it's not the first time this season we've seen that. It's not as fluid as what it has been over previous years. And what you wanted was people to go out and make space for someone to make a run. Instead, everyone just come inside. And we got so far. Klopp was fuming, but that was the chance. You know, that was the chance to put it to bed. And the longer the game goes, 2-0, 2-1 is an awful score. You know, and you're always leaving the chance that a deflected shot, a bit of luck, something goes right, a set piece, you name it. Anything can go against you. But that was the golden chance. There's a few other chances in the second half, you know, some decent shots. Onana made a couple of decent saves. But ultimately, that counterattack, you have to work that better. Play it earlier for a start. It had to be played earlier for a start. But once Elliott got so far and he stopped, it just allowed everyone to get back and the chance was gone. As soon as the space was closed up and the chance was gone. And from there, you know, I was banging my head against the brick wall. I really was, because like the amount of and I wouldn't say there were gilt-edged chances that we created in the second half, but half chances that on another day you get two or three of them will go in. But it was that was the one golden chance that you have to make better decisions. You know,
I mean, it's a 5v2. You have to score. You have to score. Anytime you get those kind of numbers, because they're throwing men forward, trying to get the equalizer, we break on them, red arrows, all those cliches going forward. And it was a perfect summation, Ashley, of our attacking threat, which, I mean, it's strange to say in a game where you score three goals. I mean, two of them, albeit by deflections, but I didn't think that was going to come back to bite us in the ass. And then sure enough, 86 minute, the man that people accuse of being a fidget spinner gets the ball in the box and sure as shit spins on it and puts it into the net. That's a heartbreaker, isn't it?
It was so unfortunate. And yeah, I mean, the breakaway, it was shades of Alexander Arnold against Arsenal, where, you know, that open goal haunted me for months after. And I'm sure that this will probably do the same, which is great. I feel like the Anthony goal was just to piss Rajiv off in our chat. You know, he just probably knew that was going to happen.
Which, if anybody deserves it, it's Rajiv.
it was just a sucker punch. You're just like, really? Like, we were so close to just getting over the line in this poor performance. And that was free of the night.
Yeah. But I mean, after they make it 2-2, we go down the other end. I don't exactly know how it came about, because at this point it was frantic, Kev. The last 5 minutes of regular time plus added time in the original 90. Harvey Elliott somehow hits the post. I don't know how it came about. Did you see what happened there?
Yeah, it was a shot. It wasn't even a shot. He was trying to get a cross in. And you either mishit the cross or whatever, which way you look at it, it hit off the inside of the post and bounced out. But, you know, sometimes they go for you. That ball bounces, comes out to an on-running Darwin Nunez, who just tucks it in, and you make hay while the sun shines kind of thing. But that, it just wasn't that kind of day, you know? And
the chances just kept coming. I mean, shortly thereafter, United are down. There's a cross. I think it's from Marcus Rashford. It goes right through that corridor of uncertainty, the danger area. Comes off of Van Dijk's shin. I think it ends up going out for a throw in, maybe.
Yeah.
They get a free kick late. They send Fathead up. You know, Christian Eriksen is throwing the ball into the box. He's got a good delivery. Big Harry Maguire gets his momentum going. It's all good. We survived that. Kelleher claws it away. And I mean, Ashley, Marcus Rashford must have thought he was the most unlucky lad in the entire world when, with what would have been the last kick of the game, he puts it wide. And
it was the heart in mouth moment there.
Yeah.
Yeah, I just, all I wrote was just a shocked face on my notes. I didn't even write anything because I was just so grateful that he had missed and so grateful to have gotten to the final whistle. And I was like we escaped there. Like, let's use that. Let's take that into the, like, whatever little huddle speech that you're going to give before the extra time. And I don't know. Yet again, they didn't really do that.
Yeah, no. Project 5AM, Fathead and Slabhead are indeed the same person. That's all Harry Maguire. And I mean, Kev, Ashley mentioned
it was offside. It was offside anyway.
Right? They didn't show it was, for me.
Yeah. Well, I didn't see that at all.
Yeah, no, he was off. They showed it at halftime. The end of full time. It would have been offside. But at the same time, that should have been the absolute alarm bells you needed, that you're far, you know, it's 2-2, but they're capable of that kind of a counter. And they threatened it so many times in the game. You know, they just couldn't make their decisions. They couldn't get it right. And
well, I can't recall the last time that we felt like we were absolutely hanging on, praying for that final whistle to come as much as the last 5-10 minutes of that match. Like, we were completely on the ropes.
Yeah. And you felt, I mean, the thing is, Ten Hag had made the changes. So it was, they were throwing the kitchen sink at it. They had the extra man on the wings all the time. And they literally threw everything at it. And it nearly paid off, you know, at the end of normal time. If that had gone in, I'm certain 100% it would have been chalked off. But at the end of the day, if you don't take your chances in normal time, that's what can happen. And I mean, I'm seeing it here. United managed 19 shots to Liverpool's 23. All right, in normal time, but they had a better XG at 2.71 compared to Liverpool's 1.82. The problem is because that chance was so gilt-edged and it wasn't flagged as offside, that goes down as like a 0.9 chance or something. So
maybe not 0.9, but you know, that's a penalty.
We had the better chances. You know, we had the better chances in the second half to finish it off, and we just didn't for whatever reason. And I can't use tiredness and legs as an excuse, because if that was the case, we wouldn't have created the chances in the first place. It was just poor decision making in that last counter attack that ultimately has cost us, you know, because that's one you have to get right. I mean, it's not as if they don't practice and drill that into them, because it's normally where we are so dangerous is when our opponents have a corner.
Yep.
I always fancied us when we're defending a corner that we can do something at the other end. Even if we force a corner out of it, that if we get the first break right, that we can work it through.
I'll come back to you and ask you how you feel about us when we are attacking a corner when we get to the end of it. We get to the end of full time. We know we're going to have an extra half an hour. And I'm not going to lie, Ashley, I felt very good about our chances going into that extra half an hour period, because I was looking at who Manchester United had on the pitch in terms of people who are natural defenders, and they had Diogo Dalo, Victor Lindelof, and Harry Maguire, and that was it. Everybody else, maybe Scott McTominay as a six, but they had gone, like Kev said, they pushed that D-pad all the way to the right, all out attack. They had to go all out attack to get the goal back in regular time, to draw it level, to get to extra time. Now there's an extra half an hour. They had no defenders on the bench to bring on to shore things up. I can't have been alone and thinking that, like, we should win this in extra time, because they had just gone for it. Right?
Yeah. I mean, for what was on the pitch, the names there. Yeah, for sure. Although I will say, I felt like they had the momentum. I felt like they had the momentum at the end of the game, and they were pinning us back. And but yeah, in terms of names on the pitch, I mean, I think there was one point where Anthony was their left back. Mm-hmm. And it was just Harry Maguire at the back. And, you know, I kept asking myself, okay, well, like, when are we going to take advantage of this? When are we going to test them? And we didn't. We sort of just played within ourselves a little bit during that time. And I was just surprised. I was just surprised. I don't know.
Yeah. Fuck me. For just a bit of light comedy, 5 minutes into the first half of extra time, Joe Gomez absolutely body checks Alino, which I quite liked. The ball went out for a throw in, and he ran into him with it. And then a much maligned substitute, which, I mean, I saw this stuff when I went out for a break after the 90 minutes before extra time started, of people talking about how poor Elliott had been. And it was like, he's been on the pitch for 20 minutes. Like, you talk about, you know, he's been absolutely brutal, but that a boy, Harvey. I mean, we have a throw in. Connor Bradley throws it in to McAllister, who returns it to him as you normally do. And then Connor Bradley shows some incredible dribbling skills to get through a couple of United players. He lays it off to Harvey Elliott, who takes the shot. Yeah, it's a deflection, but it's going in anyway, so it counts as his goal. And it's 3-2 to Liverpool. And that's it, right, Kev? That's it.
It should be. Without the deflection, Maguire blocks that. But again, it goes back to the other goal. You take your shot, you take your chance. And you got rewarded for having the effort. The only worry I had in the first half of extra time was the amount of times Christian Eriksen was getting on the ball in the middle of the park. With the forward players and the pace that they had on the pitch, Christian Eriksen is one of these players that you do not want to be able to pick his head up and pick passes. He's still very, very good at doing it. And he did it a few times. They had a few good chances. But again, about the absolute perfect time, if you're going to score a goal, is right before anyone can react to it. And it's bang on 105 minutes. Elliott gets a goal. We got 3-2 up. And you're thinking, thank Christ for that. Can breathe again, can relax. It shouldn't be this hard. Because look at, like you said, look who's on the pitch. Play properly and you'll just work your way through this. You'll work your way through them just by playing properly. And it got worse after that. Mm-hmm. Because they made the other change and they bring on Mason Mount for his first game in forever. And did they take Lindelof off then?
They did. They literally had Maguire and Dalot as their recognized defenders on the pitch at that point.
So it's literally a case, you got 15 minutes, see it out, let Quevin Kelleher go full Pickford every time the ball comes into his hand, and just kill the game off. And when you get the ball through the thirds, play it properly. Simple passes, quick 1-2s, work the space. The space is all there. All they had to do was play it properly.
Yeah.
You know, and credit, and you won't hear it often coming out of my mouth, but credit Manchester United. They just kept going and going and going. And eventually, you know, it was our own fucking stupidity. It was our own stupidity that cost us.
It certainly was. I mean, Kev, you said you wanted Kelleher to go full Pickford. He did that. He obliged 4 minutes into the second half of added time. He gets a yellow for time wasting, which when you're up, you're like, yeah, boy, you know, that's game management right there. But game management. Yeah, Ashley, Darwin Nunez, he tries to go. Frankie goes to Hollywood with a ball in our defensive third, and it's just criminal is the word I put down, because you cannot do that. McTominay slots in Rashford and he scores, and it's just, oh, Darwin, what did you do, Darwin?
The pass was never there. It was never there to begin with. I don't know what he was thinking, and I don't know. It's sort of what I would expect from Darwin. Like, he's so forward thinking that he's not gonna hold himself back and make those decisions where he asks himself, like, oh, is this a high risk pass or not? I don't think that goes through his mind. And that's exactly what that was. It was a high risk pass, and we didn't need to do that. And we got punished. Hmm. I don't know. I don't know what to say.
Yeah. Well, no, we got punished. I mean, you've absolutely hit it on the nose right there. I put down, like, the only thing that gets him out of that is if he goes and scores a winner now, which, as we all know, he did not. Bobby Clark comes on for Luis Diaz, which we're hearing that, where are we here? Where'd that go? Nope, not that one. Somebody was saying that there's potential injury possibilities for both Darwin Nunez and Luis Diaz. So
I've seen it, but I haven't seen it posted from anyone so far.
Yay. Okay. So it was just Emmett saying it then. Bobby Clark comes on for Luis Diaz in the 23rd minute of the half hour added on. I mean, Kev, we get a corner with 30 seconds to go in extra time.
Well, hang on. Before that, Rashford had an absolute guilt edge chance.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, didn't
he? With 3 minutes to go, and he absolutely fluffed it.
No, that was McTominay. So, yeah, Rashford crosses it into the middle for McTominay, and Connor Bradley's busting his lungs to get back. Very good point. Good catch, Kev. Yeah, Rashford goes off on the counterattack. Yeah.
Yeah.
And he puts it just wide of the net. It was poor from Connor Bradley. He did almost everything right up until the last 3 milliseconds to just let his man get in front of him, get onto the ball. He puts it wide, but we get the last chance of the game, Kev. It's the last chance of the game. 30 seconds left in injury time. There might not be too much added on. You know, Kelleher took a yellow for time wasting. Ahmed Diallo took a yellow for stopping us taking a free quickly. Boy, say that three times fast. McAllister makes an incredible turn in the middle of the park. You know, United hoof the ball forward. McAllister gets it. He stops on a sixpence, turns around, feeds it to Endo. We end up winning a corner from it, and it's like, here we go. It's a League Cup. Send big man up. Here we go. And I'm coming to you on this, Kev, because you talked about how we can be so dangerous from other teams' corners. You know I like Harvey Elliott.
It's nothing to do with Harvey Elliott. Why on earth were we leaving one player back? It's the 120th minute. Whatever you do, you don't lose it from there. You make sure that, fine, if you whip it in and Virgil could get ahead on it, great. But whatever you do, you don't shoot yourself in the foot like that. Harvey got caught on the ball. It was more good pressing rather than Harvey getting caught on the ball, because I don't know what more he could have done there. Barb grabbing your man around the neck and taking him down. But even then, I think he was gone at that stage. And once you've got 2v1 in that situation, bear in mind, the kid who scored it is a kid, Ahmed Diallo. Yeah. You know, so it's like you hope your keeper can bail you out. At the end of the day, they worked that chance really, really well. But we absolutely shot ourselves in both feet with a sawn-off shotgun at close range. It was the height of stupidity that should have been picked up by someone to say you do not leave one player on the halfway line and three around the edge of the box. There is just no need. You know, what happened in the cup final is so rare. The odds of lightning striking twice in the space of a couple of weeks are slim and none. And we did enough in the 120 minutes to get it to penalties. At worst case scenario, you get it to penalties.
Nobody likes watching them when you're involved in them, but don't lose it.
But yeah, don't lose it. Whatever you do, don't lose it. And we shot ourselves in the foot, monumentally shot ourselves in the foot. And there's no one else to blame apart from the person who told them to go up and whoever's on the sideline saying, wait. I mean, but I understand, you know, we've always been that side who will just take risks. And I can't remember a time where we've been punished like that at the end of a game. You know, I can't think of one. Man. You know, we got caught against Leeds on a fluke of a goal trying to win it where we were 0-0. But other than that, someone else might be able to throw one in. You just don't do that. That is just if someone did that in an under 14s game, you're reddening them. You're reddening them after it. You know, look, it's done and it is what it is. Dallow got sent off for taking his shirt off, but who the fuck?
Yeah, I had turned it off by that point. I presume when the ball went in the back of the net that John Brooks had blown up for the final whistle. So
No, he left it go for another 3 minutes.
What?
You know, he left it go until about 124 minutes.
Did we have a chance?
No. United, whenever they got on the ball, literally just minded it and shepherded it and did their best to try to draw fouls, win throw-ins, you know, just see it out. What we should have done in the 90, to be honest. And what we were trying, that's the worst of it for me. In the 90, you could tell that we went into a phase from about 75 to the time they got their goal, where we were just trying to manage it and see it out. We were passing it around the back, passing it into midfield, taking it back, going back to the keeper and going long. And when we were going long, we were losing it because there was no one up there to take it. We weren't winning the second balls because the midfield didn't press up. And it was rinse and repeat until they got their goal. So it's there's a few players there that need to learn from this one, you know. Yeah. And the worst of it is, if we'd lost to Man City, I wouldn't give a shit. I'd be annoyed and I'd be disappointed, but that would disappear really quickly because I don't know a single solitary Man City fan. Every single one of us knows a Man United fan who's going to be in our face when we go back to work on Monday or Tuesday morning. And this is the one that really boils my piss more than any of them, because they're the ones who are going to get to the end of the season, win sweet sum of fuck all, but they stopped us winning a quad. And they'll dine out on that from now to the end of the season, because that is their season. This competition is their season. And that's what really pisses me off, is the fact that the amount of Manchester United fans over here that will be lording it over anyone for as long as they can drives me mad. And, you know, I understand we go and beat them in the league, fine, but I don't give a fuck. I wouldn't want to lose a game of tiddlywinks to these pricks. You know, not a mind a game of football. So it is what it is. Take your hits.
I know.
Just get on with life.
Let's get through the bits. It's your moment, Ashley, and let's run through some post-match Klopp quotes. Klopp quotes. It's another thing you don't want to say 10 times too quickly.
All right. So, from Klopp, he says, "Not a great start from us. A very good start from United. Then we started controlling the game and played an exceptional game from the moment on for a long, long time in the first half. Getting out at halftime, playing the way we wanted to play, causing them massive problems. We should have scored more and finished off the game. Didn't. Too open. Congratulations to Man United. They deserve to go through. They fought really hard, and my boys did well. I cannot blame anybody. The boys gave absolutely everything. That's how the dressing room looks. That's how it should be in a quarterfinal of an FA Cup. The boys go off on international duty. Let's hope they come back healthy, and let's see what we can do for the rest of the season. I'm really proud of what I saw and the effort we put in. Great atmosphere. Our people, sensational. I loved too much about it, but the result, obviously, the opposite of what we wanted. I liked a lot of what we saw, to be honest, but in the end, United were probably fresher than us, and it's a home game."
And I think that's a prescient point. Like, I know it'll sound to others, or maybe some of us that are in here for every show with us after the matches, like excuse making, but eventually the grind was going to catch up with us. Like, I'm trying to grasp at straws, maybe, Ashley, because quite like Kev, I don't know any Manchester United fans. I barely know any football fans over here in Hamilton, Ontario, Canada. So I don't have to deal with that onslaught of shit talk that's going to come tomorrow, but I still don't like losing to Manchester United. Man,
my cousins are already on the phone. My cousins are already in a WhatsApp group giving it socks. And because it's Paddy's Day, they've all been out on the drink. So it's just one of them, isn't it? I mean,
yeah,
at the end of the day, how can I put it? At the end of the day, we play him again, what, April 7th, something like that? It's another Sunday afternoon we got. And we needed this break. We needed this international break. And if there is a few injuries, and, you know, hopefully they, you know, Diaz groin, Darwin hamstring, Gakpo ankle. I saw that Gakpo one, actually. He rolled his ankle. There was a slight tackle in the box, and he came in over his ankle, and you could see it bend. So it's might not be the worst thing in the world if those three aren't traveling. And we just hope now that when everyone comes back after the break, that they come back healthy and without too many minutes in the legs, because a lot of teams, especially the European teams, it's mainly friendlies. So you just hope that their minutes are managed for this break. And the last thing I want to not hear about is a Liverpool player doing a 90-minute stint, let alone a two 90-minute stints.
Well, because it's all friendlies, right, Kev? This isn't a competitive international break.
I don't know about South America and Asia. I don't know. That's the truth. But I know it. Like, I think England are playing Brazil in.
Well, if England are playing Brazil, then that means the South Americans aren't in qualifiers.
Not all of them. Some of them might be. You know, we'll find out soon enough.
Sounds like
we'll have a proper look. We'll have a proper look at it as the week goes on. Because look, we're gonna have nothing really much to talk about. But I think an awful lot of. I'm just looking there now. Republic of Ireland are playing Belgium. England playing Brazil. That's on the Saturday. So I'm seeing a few African, like Ivory Coast, are playing in that week as well. So hopefully it is just friendlies, you know, and the likes of Egypt will let Mo take it handy, because he shouldn't be
I believe he's not going, isn't he? I thought the Ministry of Sport for Egypt came out and said that Mo Salah won't be called over for their UAE friendlies against New Zealand. I mean, it means absolutely nothing. And Ashley, you said there that there's FIFA World Cup qualifying for South America, which is strange then that Brazil is playing England.
Yeah, there's a Uruguay versus Argentina match, and then a Bolivia. I'm just looking at Uruguay right now.
I see the Asian Confederation is playing World Cup qualifying matches. CONCACAF is on. I mean, hey, everybody, mark your calendars. The 22nd of March, Anguilla is playing Turks and Caicos. The game later that day, U.S. Virgin Islands against the British Virgin Islands in the Virgin Island Derby. There is no bigger game in all of world football than the Virgin Island Derby. Fucking ridiculous.
Yeah. I mean, Madge saying there, Mo's not going. I hope that's the case.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure. And Brazil have no goalie. Yes, Brazil's number one and number two goalies. Oh. Number one, obviously, Alisson, and the shit.
Taffarel did bring his gloves with him. So you never know.
Well, I believe Pete Aluga might be recalled from St. Pat's, so he might be available for Brazil if they're in desperate need. But I mean, we've reached the end of it. It's a terrible result that nobody absolutely likes. So this is not going to be nearly as fun as it could otherwise have been. But Ashley, who is your man of the match?
Oh, jeez. I didn't even think of one. I don't know.
Come on.
I mean, I can't give it to anyone. I can't. Like, I don't think there was anyone that really stepped up.
Antoango said this early in the show. Kelleher was good. I don't think you can fault Kelleher for any of the goals, really.
Yeah.
You know, maybe the fourth, he could get a fingertip to it and steer it past the post, and we go to penalties, and there's drama and romance and all that from it. But yeah, it's a real dog's breakfast, isn't it? But you got to pick somebody. Come on, Ashley.
McAllister.
Yeah.
Yeah. It seems like that's the popular choice. Archie Doolin, McAllister, Chris Golding, McAllister, Avo the old man, Andrew Den, McAllister. Robert Maguire said Kwanzaa at the start of injury time had two terrible clearances from our box that he put right to Manchester United players. It was really bad, but it seems like LFC Spectre, Use, everybody saying that. Madge Apple, Virgil van Dijk. I would probably lean towards Virgil van Dijk myself. Kev, what about you?
Yeah, for me, it would have been McAllister. 90%.
He did well because he took that yellow card early.
Yeah, managed himself really well. Got his goal. The other one, I suppose, I thought that got through an awful lot of work was Luis Diaz. He got through an awful lot of work. And I think he could. The only thing is he'd frustrate you in a way when you're watching him, because all I wanted him to do was go on the outside of Dalot and just make Dalot think twice about which way, what he was going to do. But, you know, he won a lot of his ground. Defensively as well, he was really good. But, yeah, like you said, it's a dog's dinner. McAllister was arguably our best player. But at the end of the day, you score three goals in any game and you don't win it. It's dog shit, really.
Yep. Yeah, absolutely. Kev, did you have Graham Souness over there struggling with Jarrell Kwanzaa's name?
No, I didn't. Well, I don't watch the stuff. I watched a bit of the halftime stuff because I needed to refresh my mind about the goals. But yeah, you had Roy Keane, Ian Wright, and Graham Souness in the box, and it's like, between the three of them, they couldn't come up with a coherent point about what they were watching. It was just like watching fan TV without watching fan TV. And at the end of the day,
you're the Roy Keane of this one. I guess that makes sense. You get to be the Ian Wright, Ashley.
Everyone loves Ian Wright, so you're all good.
Exactly. So, I know what I'm doing. I know what I'm doing here. But yeah, that's. I think that's more than enough for a post-match reaction for what was a real shite match for a St. Patrick's Day. The quad dream is over. We can all put that one to bed until the next time we foolishly believe that that's a thing that's going to be happening. Shocking. Well, it's almost like nobody wins the quad because it's unbelievably hard to win a quadruple.
Yeah. So, Ashley makes a great point there in the chat.
Check out the silver lining for today.
Fucking A. That's how you finish it, Ashley. The last time Liverpool lost 4-3 in the FA Cup 1990, they ended the season as league champions. I wish I had a quick button to just end the show right on that note, but I don't. I mean, do you have any other silver linings to get us out of here before we go, Ashley?
That was my one.
I love
the
it.
Best.
It's fantastic. And I mean, Kev, they say that you can pull the wool over Klopp's eyes once, but he'll get you on the second time. So we got United again in the league, and that's what's important at this point, isn't it?
Mate, if they're not motivated to get 3 points on the back of that today, then they never will. You're right about what you're saying about the quad. Unbelievably hard. And if you're looking for any silver linings out of this, look at the draw for the Champions League. Look at the way those games and where they're sandwiched in between. We do get a game break down the line where others will be playing.
Question
where we are
for
not.
You. Will this move the Everton match forward, or will it still be rescheduled for that weekend? Or for the midweek before the final match week?
Yeah, it will be, because Everton will have a game scheduled for that weekend anyway. That their normal scheduled game for that weekend will be played on that weekend, and the free fixture when it becomes available is when the Everton game will be played. As far as I know, I highly doubt that they'd swap fixtures on that weekend. If anything, whoever we're supposed to be playing that weekend, if we're playing in the league, that game for us will happen in the league. You know, so as long as it's not one of the sides that are involved in the FA Cup.
Yeah, there you go. And as Project 5AM says, never cared about the quad, just want the title in front of the fans, and that's the most important thing. And from a purely selfish point of view, going out of the FA Cup means that whether we make the Europa League final or not, when it's Jurgen Klopp's last game as Liverpool manager, I will be surrounded by Talking Cop Irish Liverpool fans because we will not play on the Sunday after the Europa League final. So the final match week and then the Europa League final, I will be over there in and amongst you all, ensconced amongst pints and pints of Guinness, and that's all well and good. But speaking of which, what's that?
Let's get on. I was going to say, you talked about pints of Guinness. Come on.
Yeah, I know. Well, we got Gav and Emmett are going to come back on in 2.5 hours to go through the Sunday night show. I think Keith and Shawnee both decided to just go out drinking instead, and who can blame them really on that one. So good decision there, fellas. But check out Phil Casey's charity in our link descriptions there. Check out our 2024 charity sponsors. Become a member. Check out footballprizes.co.uk. And for the love of God, avoid your Manchester United friends. It finished at Old Trafford. Manchester United 4, Liverpool 3. We're out of the FA Cup and we're on to an international break. Thank you very much for joining us. Ashley, fantastic again. Kev, so-so.
Cheers,
me,
buddy.
I can always do better. Thanks, everybody. We'll see you after the next one. It'll be in weeks.
Sports Social Podcast Network.
This podcast is sponsored by Skylight Frame. Mother's Day is almost here. What are you getting her? Something that shows you care. Something that makes her feel loved. Something that won't stress you out. Something like the Skylight Frame. The Skylight Frame is the perfect gift. It's a touchscreen photo frame your whole family can upload photos to, from wherever they are in the world. It's a way to share with her all the moments that matter. It sets up in seconds. You can even make sure that it's already loaded with photos when your mom opens her Mother's Day gift. And her Skylight Frame can hold thousands of the treasured photos you share. It's an easy, heartfelt way for mom to stay connected with those who matter most. It really is the perfect gift. Now, as a special Mother's Day offer for our listeners, get 15% off your purchase of a Skylight Frame when you go to skylightframe.com/easy. That's SKYLIGHTFRAME.com/easy. Get 15% off your Mother's Day purchase now at skylightframe.com/easy.